Good morning and welcome to WIPR's special coverage of the verdict in the trial of Edward Nero. I'm Tom Hall, joined in the studio by attorney Edward Smith. Edward Nero is the second of six officers to be charged in connection with the death of Freddie Gray, who died after being in police custody on the 12th of April, 2015. The first trial was that of Officer William Porter. You'll recall that that trial ended in a hung jury. At this hour, Judge Barry Williams is expected to reach and announce his verdict in the bench trial of Officer Edward Nero. Officer Nero waived his right to a jury trial, asking the judge to rule in this case. The trial ended last Thursday. Judge Williams, expected to begin court proceedings about 10 minutes ago and will be announcing his verdict, we think, very shortly. We will have that verdict for you as soon as it comes in. A couple of items of background. Edward Nero is 30 years old. He has pleaded not guilty to four separate charges in connection with the death of Freddie Gray, but he has not been charged in Mr. Gray's death specifically. He is charged with second-degree assault, with reckless endangerment, and two counts of misconduct in office. So four charges that the judge will be announcing his verdict on shortly. Again, second-degree assault that carries a penalty of up to 10 years in prison. Reckless endangerment carries a penalty of up to 5 years in prison. Misconduct in office does not carry a set term limit. All of the four charges faced by Officer Edward Nero are misdemeanor charges. William Porter, you'll recall, was tried first of the six officers. That trial took place last November. In late November, by mid-December, the trial had concluded and the jury was not able to meet the standard, not able to come to a conclusion on all four counts. There was an 11-1 split in favor of acquittal on the charge of involuntary manslaughter against William Porter. There was an 8-2 vote in favor of acquittal with two people undecided on the second-degree assault charge faced by William Porter. Again, these are jury votes in the William Porter case, which took place last year, at the end of last year in December. Mr. Porter was also charged with reckless endangerment, as is Mr. Nero. The jury was split 7-3, according to one of the jurors who remained anonymous, but did speak to the Baltimore Sun about the deliberations that the jury in that trial underwent. So the 7-3 vote was in favor of conviction, with two people on the jury undecided on the reckless endangerment charge for Officer William Porter. On the misconduct in office charge for Officer William Porter, the jurors split 10-1 in favor of conviction. So the jury in the Porter trial leaned on two counts towards conviction and on two counts towards acquittal. Judge Barry Williams will weigh in and announce his decision, having taken a look at the evidence and considered things over the weekend on four counts. Again, those counts against Officer Edward Nero do not include any counts charging him in the death of Freddie Gray, but he is charged with second-degree assault, reckless endangerment, and two separate counts of misconduct in office. So, Edward Smith, you are a veteran of Courthouse East, where things are happening as we speak. As a matter of fact, you were down there this morning.
Yes, indeedy. I'm a longtime veteran and one with a gray beard now. Yes.
I mean, you were just there an hour ago.
I was.
What's the scene at the courthouse? What was it as you left about, 10 o'clock or so?
Well, there are a few protesters. Of course, the deputy sheriffs have the whole courthouse sort of cordoned off on both sides, and there are more press down there than anybody else. In fact, I think we may have press from the surrounding four states in our fair city. So at least they're helping the economy.
Yeah. Well, of course, this is a case. All six cases are drawing very much national, even international attention. Is there any reason to believe, as an attorney, and you've been a defense attorney, you were with the state's attorney's office as a prosecutor, is there any reason to believe that the verdict that was not able to be reached, the verdicts that were not able to be reached in this hung jury trial of Officer William Porter, will give any indication as to Officer Nero's chances in terms of his guilt or innocence, given that this is not a jury trial and Judge Williams is going to be deciding by himself?
Well, first, the theoretical shouldn't have anything to do with it. This case should be decided on its own merits or demerits, as the case may be. And if it does, then we have the wrong judicial officer hearing the case. And I don't think that that is what is happening now. I think this judge is making an independent decision based on what he has heard and the evidence in this trial. And judges are often tasked with the proposition that you have to separate out that which might distract you and focus on what is before you.
The prosecution has adduced an interesting theory. Some people have called it a novel legal theory in this case, saying that the arrest, which Mr. Nero may or may not have been involved in, because there was some testimony that said that he really had nothing to do with it, Officer Miller, Garrett Miller, who was one of the bicycle officers with Officer Nero, said, "Oh, no, this is all me. It didn't involve Officer Nero." But just the theory that the arrest itself was without justification, that the arrest itself was a crime that Officer Nero committed. What's your take on that interesting theory?
Well, it's out there. There's no doubt about that. Well, we normally are the people, the defense lawyers, we use that kind of lack of probable cause for an arrest to determine or to say that Terry versus Ohio, which is the case that dealt with this kind of thing where there's a reasonable suspicion, so an arrest will, in fact, have probable cause. We are the ones who usually say, oh, no, the police officer didn't have any probable cause whatsoever. The real danger here, of course, is that our police officers are on the street to protect us. And if there is some reason, which is reasonable suspicion, that a person is fleeing because he or she might be involved in some nefarious activity, or that it is a high crime area and they have the right and the duty to protect citizens in that zone, then we really have to make sure that those officers can act in a fair and reasonable way and to protect us. So I don't know if they're really just, you know, fat mouthing because they realize they have an uphill battle and this is the only thing that they're left with, because their assistants from day to day, they don't say that when they get into courtrooms. I've sat in many courtrooms over the last 43 plus years and listened to many arguments by prosecutors and defense lawyers, made them myself. And this one is one that, frankly, I haven't heard from a prosecutor before. I suppose someplace in the country, somewhere, somebody's saying the same thing, but it is novel and it is new and it's not refreshing because of what's at stake here for the protection of citizens in Baltimore and people who come into town as tourists. And we want everybody to feel comfortable and free of crime. And so we want to give the police the benefit of the doubt.
Because this sort of comes down to, the trial appeared to come down to really just a 2 or 3 minute period in this process in which Mr. Gray was apprehended and then put into the van. He was famously not strapped into that van, and it appears that rolling around in the back of the van led to the spinal cord injury that eventually led to his death. The prosecution is also saying that Mr. Nero had a duty to strap him in, and he didn't do that. So that's a crime of omission, if it in fact is determined by the judge to be a crime, and that the arrest itself was a crime of commission. The defense is saying that, you know, even if the officer was wrong, even if it turns out that Mr. Gray should not have been arrested, that his actions would have to be really, really unreasonable given what was going on that fateful morning. What's the legal standard to meet unreasonability?
Well, see, the problem here is that proof is required beyond a reasonable doubt in order to convict someone of a crime. There is what we call mens rea, intentional actions. There's actus rea, what we call an action that causes an event to occur. Under these circumstances, there's some doubt as to what Officer Nero's duties were. The prosecution seems to think that everybody was supposed to strap Mr. Gray into the van on that day, and I think that there was testimony that that just was not the case. It was the wagon. It was the wagon guy's responsibility to do that. So I think in terms of the actus rea there, you see, you can be negligent but not criminally negligent because of the high bar of proof that is required. Judge is going to follow the same kind of theory, and that is to say that you cannot convict a person beyond a reasonable doubt if there's a doubt that is reasonable. Mm-hmm. And in this instance, there seems to be a lot of evidence to the contrary to say that this police officer, either he wasn't involved in striping him into the van to begin with as a matter of training, an expectation of the police department, and two, even if there was something that happened, he was merely negligent and not criminally negligent.
That's Attorney Edward Smith. If you're just joining us, I'm Tom Hall. This is special coverage in the verdict against Officer Edward Nero, in the trial of Officer Edward Nero. That verdict was scheduled to begin being announced by Judge Barry Williams this morning at 10:30 down at Courthouse East on Calvert Street in Baltimore. Edward Smith joins me in the studio. On the line with me on the telephone is Ray Kelly. He is with the No Boundaries Coalition. Mr. Kelly, thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you for having me.
What, in your estimation, would comprise justice for Freddie Gray in this particular case?
Well, in our community, the justice won't really come from the case. We think that the justice has to come from changing the actual policies that allow things like this to happen. I think if there is a continued not guilty verdicts for the police department, it's going to be disheartening in the community. It's going to be discouraging for the people that actually are fighting for these actual changes that need to take place, because it's going to kind of establish a precedent that negligence is acceptable in a negligent department. And therefore, it's going to be unpunished.
And given the fact, as Ed Smith was just talking about, the reasonable doubt standard, because isn't it possible that there is a very gray area here, as it were? I mean, forgive the pun, Mr. Gray's last name happens to be Gray, but isn't there an area of some uncertainty about who should have done what at what time? For example, the defense is asserting that Officer Nero, really, you can't prove beyond a reasonable doubt that it was his responsibility, his specific responsibility, to take care of Freddie Gray. There were other officers involved, many of whom outranked Officer Nero. In other words, there's a different legal standard, as Edward Smith was just mentioning. There's negligence, and then there's criminal activity. Do you think it's going to be possible for people to parse that difference?
No. I just feel like there's a certain amount of human responsibility. Once you become in custody of the police department, there should be a reasonable expectation of safety that someone should step up. It shouldn't be departmental negligence stops human beings from doing what's right.
I'm sorry, sir. Continue. I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's pretty much it. I mean, no matter how you look at it, no matter what the situation, he was a human being. He was caught. He was in custody. At what point are these officers to assume responsibility for their suspect and the person they have in custody? It can't just be that the police department's procedures are faulty and the culture is bad as an excuse.
on 88.1 WYPR. You're listening to special coverage, the verdict in the case of Officer Edward Nero. I'm Tom Hall, joined in the studio by Ed Smith, an attorney with both experience as a prosecutor and a defense attorney. He has argued cases in front of the Supreme Court. He is a former member of the Department of the State's Attorney of Baltimore. Ray Kelly joins us on the line with the No Boundaries Coalition. Also joining us on the line this morning is Davon Love. He is one of the leadership team from Leaders of a Beautiful, Beautiful Struggle. Mr. Love, thank you for your time this morning.
Thanks, Sam.
Let me ask you the same question that I asked Ray Kelly. What, in your estimation, comprises justification or justice for Freddie Gray?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important for people to understand that the fact that a state's attorney has to prosecute the officers goes to show just how flawed the system is. Like Mr. Kelly mentioned earlier, you know, it's important that there are the internal mechanisms to address police misconduct before they have to be prosecuted. And so in many ways, these trials are uncharted territory in the sense that, you know, most officers that engage in police abuse are not, they don't end up being prosecuted because of the nature of the relationship between law enforcement and traditionally between the law, between law enforcement and the state's attorney's office. So it's really hard to say, you know, what, you know, folks think is going to happen in, you know, in these trials. And it's really difficult when you ask the question, what would constitute justice? You know, because again, you know, we need to ensure that the policies that are in place make this the last resort in terms of police accountability instead of really the only mechanism that has a chance of holding police accountable.
You've been a longtime activist in this area, as has Mr. Kelly. What would you expect a reaction to a verdict one way or the other? And, of course, there are four different counts. There could be different verdicts. He could be found guilty of some and not guilty of others. We just don't know. We are awaiting word from Judge Williams' courtroom. The proceedings were scheduled to begin at about 10:30 this morning. It's not unusual from what we understand from reporters on the scene and reporters with a lot of experience covering trials like this that things might not get underway for 15, 20 minutes after it's scheduled to begin. But what have you heard among activists in the community? We understand that there's a sort of a small number of protesters down on Calvert Street this morning. Do you have any expectation one way or the other about what might happen after this announcement is made public?
I mean, I would say the average person on the street doesn't expect very much from the judicial system, you know, given that law enforcement traditionally has received so much leeway and protection from real accountability. I think, you know, the average person's expectation, you know, I mean, this is coming from someone that hasn't really kept up with the details of the case, but I would just imagine the average person doesn't expect any meaningful accountability, you know, in this case.
Edward Smith, when you hear somebody say that, what's your reaction? I mean, you know Judge Williams. You've argued cases in before him. He's a very well-respected jurist. But perhaps he is, in fact, working in the context of a situation because of what's going on not only here in Baltimore but around the country where there's just, particularly among people in communities of color, just very little faith in the system of justice.
Well, Tom, I just heard the two brothers say some things that touched my heart. And obviously, in terms of practicality, I was thinking about a quote from Martin Luther King who said, "The moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice." And the deal here is that they're right. The frustration of a community that has been set upon by some unscrupulous police officers and some negligent police officers brings a lot of problems as it relates to accountability. The problem here is that we're dealing with one man in a set of facts and circumstances who cannot and should not be a scapegoat for the frustrations of the many. And we have to have a rule of law that says that we all stand in the same shoes. And that's why we have defense lawyers. That's why we have judges who are invested with the power to make decisions, because we can't make decisions by committee when we deal with the judicial system. That's why we have judges. Judge Williams is like any other jurist in our system. He's put there because of his background and because we believe that he will be a judge. And when you say judge in religion and anything else, that is a mighty high bar. And so I'm looking for the moral arc of the universe to work, not only for our community, because the state's attorney did bring these charges, and because there is a system which is changing as a result of what these brothers in the community are doing and what people of like mind all over our city are doing. And they are raising questions and they're getting answers.
If you're just joining us, that's Edward Smith. He's an attorney here in Baltimore. Davon Love from Leaders for a Beautiful Struggle joins me on the phone. Ray Kelly from the No Boundaries Coalition joins us. I'm Tom Hall. This is special coverage of the verdicts in the trial of Edward Nero. We are getting word now that Mr. Nero has been found not guilty of the assault charge, the reckless endangerment charge, and one misconduct charge. So there are three of the four charges. Officer Nero has been determined by Judge Williams to be not guilty in the bench trial of Edward Nero. He has four charges that he is facing today. He has pled not guilty to all four charges. One was of second-degree assault. Judge Williams has found Officer Nero not guilty of the second-degree assault charge. He has found Officer Nero not guilty of the reckless endangerment charges. And now we are getting word that on both counts of misconduct in office, Judge Barry Williams has determined that Edward Nero is not guilty. Joining us on the line is Kenny Burns, who is the Metro reporter for WIPR. Kenny, what's the scene down there at the courtroom now?
We just left the courtroom. The judge finished reading his verdict, not guilty on all counts, as you have reported. In short, he said the state did not meet its burden. Nero did not have a duty to seatbelt Freddie Gray, and that you had testimony from his fellow officer, Garrett Miller, and Brandon Ross, who shot one of the videos of Gray getting arrested. Their testimony corroborated Miller was the one that handcuffed. Miller was the one that touched Freddie Gray, not Officer Nero.
So he's not guilty on all four charges. So now we've got two of the six officers having been standing trial in this case. One, Officer Porter, reaches a hung jury with no verdict one way or the other. And now Officer Nero is exonerated of all four charges. Again, the charges are second-degree assault that carries a potential prison term of 10 years, reckless endangerment charge that carries a prison term of up to 5 years, and then two counts of misconduct in office. Edward Nero found not guilty by Judge Barry Williams on all four counts. You were in the courtroom when the verdicts were issued by the judge. What was the scene like? What were people's reaction at that very moment?
There wasn't much reaction. The deputies who come out before the court session started reiterated the rules. Obviously, no cell phones and such. But they also asked people not to remain calm. No emotional reaction. No gasps or anything. They were going to handle business as normal, or as normal as possible, considering the circumstances of it.
And
the judge finished reading the verdict. We went into recess.
So the trial has been recessed for the day. I guess the trial is now over. Is there anything else that takes place after this verdict has been read?
No, that's it. The judge read the verdict, and the Nero is consequently a free man of all the charges. And the van driver, that's scheduled to begin on June the 6th.
Right. There are four more trials that have to take place. Cesar Goodson is charged with the most serious crimes.
You have Goodson next month, followed by Lieutenant Brian Rice, Officer Garrett Miller, Officer Porter's retrial in October.
Right. That's not scheduled. This is Officer Porter, who is actually scheduled to be retried in September, and then Alicia White, the sergeant in the case, would be tried in October. So Cesar Goodson scheduled to stand trial on June 6th, Brian Rice July 5th, Garrett Miller July 27th, Kenny Burns at the Courthouse East on Calvert Street. Ed Smith, your reaction to the verdict?
Well, it was a decision, and we have to make decisions because we have to know how to move on into the future. We can move on into the future bitter, or we can move on into the future resolved to do better. And I would think I'm going to try to do better for my community, my city, and my state and my country. And I would suspect that there are others who now, armed with the knowledge of what has come before in this matter, will do the same.
Ray Kelly from the No Boundaries Coalition joining us on the phone this morning. Your reaction, sir, to the verdict, verdicts delivered by Judge Barry Williams this morning. All four counts against Edward Nero, he is found not guilty.
Yvonne, we're not surprised. This is just follows a pattern of no accountability with the police department. But I think for those of us who work on actually changing those policies, this brings another issue to light to what is appropriate conduct and office for a police officer. This is another issue that we need to actually visit, but I don't think there's going to be a big surprise in our community.
And Davon Love from Leaders for a Beautiful Struggle, your reaction to the verdicts in the Officer Nero case?
Well, I think, again, I mean, the symbolism in Nero being acquitted on all accounts, I think, will resonate with the way that people have come to see what Mr. Kelly just mentioned, the lack of accountability for police officers. And I think that symbolic resonance is something that, you know, we're going to continue, myself, Mr. Kelly, and others are going to continue to do the thing to, you know, change policy to make police more accountable. But it's just symbolic of what it is that folks, I think, distrust about law enforcement and criminal justice.
Davon, as this fits into the national picture, when things came to light about police misconduct and brutality, particularly in Ferguson, Missouri, and then we had these other jurisdictions throughout the country that had similar incidences. We had Sandra Bland, we had Tamir Rice, we had, in addition to Michael Brown and people from both coasts, from Staten Island to Oakland. How do you think the Baltimore case differs? The case of Freddie Gray is distinguished from any of those. Are there things about it that strike you as unique, or are there things about it that also strike you as just part of a larger pattern?
I would say one of the key differences is that we are fortunate to have a state's prosecutor that was willing to bring charges on the officer. And that's something that's very rare, you know, and I think that's really important for people to understand that, you know, police officers are very rarely ever charged with what these six officers were charged with. And then the conviction rate, I don't have the numbers on me, but the conviction rate is even more minuscule. But it goes to show, I mean, when you know, State's Attorney Mosby announced the charges, you know, there was a tremendous amount of, you know, excitement and jubilation from community because officers generally aren't charged. But it just goes to show, even though they're charged, again, the number of officers that are actually convicted is just very small, and I think exacerbates the feeling of distrust for law enforcement and criminal justice.
It's Davon Love from Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle here in Baltimore, a longtime activist in this area. Joining us on the line now is a professor of law from the University of Baltimore, David Jaros. He's a frequent guest on Maryland Morning, along with our good friend Edward Smith, our legal eagle team, commenting on these trials as they began with the trial of Officer William Porter last November. Dave Jaros, were you in the courtroom at the time that Judge Williams delivered his verdicts?
I was there.
And what was the mood as you assessed it?
Well, I think as described, the mood was it depends on which part of the community and how you approach these issues. I think there were family and friends of Officer Nero who certainly were there in support of him and were relieved. I think those people who see this as part of a larger issue about policing in poor communities are either frustrated or at least concerned that those issues are going to remain unresolved.
Dave, it just looks like the prosecution was simply not able to make their case. They contended that the arrest that Officer Nero participated in was simply without, they contended it was without justification. They contended that Officer Nero had a duty to strap Mr. Gray into the back of the van, but it just sounds like the judge rejected both of those central assertions.
Well, actually, I think his decision was very interesting. Because rather than make a broad claim about what the officers are responsible for doing, he actually explained his decision, and he explained it on some very narrow factual grounds that seemed to apply solely to Officer Nero. So, you know, he found that Officer Nero actually was not involved in the physical touching from the initial detention. That it was Officer Miller. And so as a result, he sort of evaded the question of whether or not that touching could be legally justified, and therefore didn't really resolve questions of liability in terms of Officer Miller. And then with regard to the reckless endangerment charge, he was very clear that it was Lieutenant Rice, who was a senior officer who was inside the van, when they loaded, and that's a harsh term to use, Mr. Gray into the van. And as a result, he seemed to rest his decision on facts that are not necessarily relevant to other officers' cases, and I think didn't really tip his hat for the future.
Ed Smith, does that sound about right, that it's very difficult to read any tea leaves in terms of what might occur in the next four trials?
Well, Dave is absolutely correct, Tom. If he was that narrow in his decision, and he must be because it only applies to the facts of this case, he can't give some generalized issue of law that applies to all cases in the future. And since he is maybe the decider of the facts in other cases, he had to be, I think, he had to parse it that finally. Mm-hmm. So I suspect that is correct.
Dave Jaros, it seems that the judge relied heavily on the testimony of another officer who will later face charges, Garrett Miller, saying that Miller and only Miller arrested Freddie Gray, and that Officer Edward Nero wasn't really legally involved in that arrest. That seems to agree quite completely with the defense's contention. Officer Miller, Garrett Miller, testified under limited immunity. He, as we've mentioned, will face charges later on in this cycle of trials. But what do you think about that contention that Nero really didn't have anything to do with the arrest itself?
Well, I think it was pretty significant because. You know, a lot of this case, it's a very complicated assault charge, and I think it's important for people to appreciate that the charge was based on simply an unlawful touching based on a lack of probable cause, not anything related to the injuries that seemed apparent on the horrific video that caught the public's attention. And what was really interesting is that the judge seemed to use the term arrest, that Officer Miller had Mr. Gray under arrest. And, of course, that becomes a critical question when that arrest was made and whether or not it was with probable cause. So if the judge thought Mr. Gray was placed under arrest without probable cause, that seems to suggest that Mr. Miller might, in fact, be in danger of having committed an offensive touching.
If you've just joined us, this is WIPR's special coverage of the verdicts in the trial of Officer Edward Nero. He is the second of six officers to face trial in connection with the death of Freddie Gray, who died after sustaining injuries while in police custody on the 12th of April, 2015, about 13 months ago. Judge Barry Williams, in this bench trial, which was requested by Officer Edward Nero, he waived his right to a jury trial. That is not a waiver that Officer William Porter decided to employ. He did have a jury trial. That jury ended up in a hung jury, was not able to come to a conclusion on the charges against him. Officer Porter will be retried in that case in the fall. Judge Barry Williams has ruled on four counts, all of which are misdemeanor charges. One is of second-degree assault, another of reckless endangerment, and two counts of misconduct while in office. Judge Williams has declared Officer Edward Nero not guilty of all four charges that he is facing this morning. This word coming from the Courthouse East on Calvert Street in downtown Baltimore just minutes ago. I'm Tom Hall, joined in the studio by Edward Smith, an attorney with experience on both sides of the benches in courtrooms, both as a defense attorney and a prosecutor. Ray Kelly from the No Boundaries Commission, No Boundaries Coalition, rather, is on the phone with us, as is Davon Love from Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. And I want to go now to reporter Jonna McCone. She's on the line. Jonna, what's going on outside the courtroom? Has word slipped out to folks on the street about what Judge Williams' verdicts were, and what's the reaction so far?
People are starting to disperse. There were about 15 protesters here earlier, and a few of them are still standing outside with signs that read, "Justice for Freddie Gray, stop the war on Black America, stop police terror from Ferguson to Baltimore." So just a few people out, a lot of reporters.
So it sounds like the reporters and the media greatly outnumber folks who showed up to protest.
Yes, very much so. There's very few protesters in front of the courthouse. Several helicopters kind of hovering overhead.
And Davon Love from Leaders for a Beautiful Struggle, does it surprise you that so few people, I'm sorry, we've lost Davon Love, but Ray Kelly from the No Boundaries Coalition, Ray, does it surprise you that very few people decided to come and make their feelings known on this particular morning?
No, not really. I think in the community there wasn't a great expectation of an actual guilty verdict. We've been organizationally poised to kind of keep influencing the policy change. So there's more structured efforts going on right now beyond the actual judicial process, where for us, it's, like I said, there is no expectation that someone would actually be convicted. So we still push for change. We still fight for change. We don't want to actually create a spectacle on something that is the norm in this part of the city.
Mr. Kelly, you've been an activist in this area for a number of years, and the work with No Boundaries Coalition has been greatly lauded and applauded for the progress and the way you have elevated the issues of income inequality and racial inequality and inequality in the criminal justice system, as well as inequality in so many other areas of our city. You sound very disheartened.
Well, it's kind of disheartened. It was expected, but just to know that with all the attention nationally that this whole situation has got for Baltimore in the past year, that the police reform efforts are still being blocked, so to speak. We still have no accountability. There's still a pattern of no accountability happening with Baltimore City when things happen in the inner city, and it's kind of expected for us. It's sad that this situation still goes on, and that's the way that society is in Baltimore City, but we didn't expect anything different. We are poised to kind of lean towards the DOJ.
Well, let me go back to our legal eagles, Edward Smith and Dave Jaros, who joins us on the line from Courthouse East. Ed Smith, the Court of Appeals just recently, just a few days ago, I guess last Friday, released its opinion in the case. They had released the verdict several weeks ago, saying that it was all right to compel Officer Porter and these other officers to testify in the trials of the other officers. The judge's ruling was unanimous, and the prosecutors had contended that testimony must be compelled from Officer Porter. It was expected that Officer Porter and Officer Garrett Miller, would both testify in the case of Officer Edward Nero. It's turned out Officer Porter was not called. What do you think about that in terms of a strategy here legally?
Well, I think it's a smart strategy by the prosecution because obviously he's the top defendant with the most onerous charges against him. And therefore, if he gets on the witness stand and he says things that might tend to incriminate him and they ask the questions, then as Dave has already given us an education on the Castigar case, then there are certain things that will not be allowed in terms of the proof that the prosecution, the new team of prosecutors, have to engage in. And even though there's a firewall because they are new prosecutors, they still cannot use derivative testimony from things that might incriminate the police officer.
All right, we have many other trials to go. We are just really at the beginning of this, not at the end of it by any means.
And miles to go before we sleep.
Edward Smith joins me here in the studio. Thanks to Dave Jarris joining us on the line from Courthouse East. Thanks to Ray Kelly from the No Boundaries Coalition, to Davon Love for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, and reporters Jonna McCone and Kenny Burns. I'm Tom Hall. This is special coverage of the verdict in the trial of Edward Nero. Again, Judge Barry Williams declaring a not guilty verdict on all four charges faced by Officer Edward Nero. More on this issue this afternoon at midday, at noon with Sheila Cast, and continuing throughout today and the rest of the week, as well as on Maryland Morning on Wednesday. I'm Tom Hall for 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. Thanks for being with us.